You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. And welcome to episode 310 of the podcast. And in this one, I interview Sam, who has kindly agreed to share her story with us. And in particular, we talk about a sexual assault that came just before the OCD, worrying about getting an STI, paedophile-themed OCD, her compulsions, doing exposure and response prevention therapy. We discuss medication and some self-stigma she experienced, what else has helped her in her journey and recovery, where she's at now, and much more. I really enjoyed chatting with Sam, and I think you'll enjoy the conversation too. And thanks as always to NoCD for supporting the work that I do. NoCD offers affordable, effective, convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. If you wanted to find out more about their therapy services and whether they take your insurance currently, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/COCD stories, or the link will be in the episode description. And as always, thank you so much to you guys for listening. I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Sam. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Thank you. It's awesome to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. And as you know, I want to hear your OCD story, so you can go into as little or as much detail as you want to share.
Okay. Well, like I said before, Stu, I'm a little starstruck. I really have learned a lot from your show and just feeling very grateful I get to be here today. So my OCD story, I guess, started when I was really young, but I didn't realize it. And it never really got that bad, I think, until I was in college. When I was in college, I had a sexual assault that gave me this fear that I had like an STD.
Okay.
That kind of became what I now recognize as an obsession. I, you know, would spend so much time worrying about this, avoided like dating people, probably went to like 5 different doctors over the period of 1 or 2 years. You know, I remember once I had this patient, because I worked as a technician at a doctor's practice during college, and this patient who had syphilis, and I remember freaking out, oh my God, what if I have syphilis? No reason to think that I would have that.
Yeah.
You know, and then the next, you know, right when I got off work, I had to go to an urgent care and get tested, and the people thought I was crazy. So that, it sounds kind of nuts, but it was really, really disruptive and upsetting during college years when you're supposed to be, you know, you're supposed to be having fun. But then that kind of went away when I started dating now my husband, and sort of, I guess he liked me, I liked him. We kind of fell in love and I kind of forgot about it. And I remember feeling like, kind of like I have my mojo back, like I can stop, you know, being so anxious all the time and like live the life that I want to live. But then I went to medical school, and med school was going great for about 6 months. And then was the day that I refer to, as a lot of people who have OCD do, as like the day my brain broke, sort of. I look back at it and, you know, it doesn't make any sense. I don't know why it upset me so much, but I was watching this TV show with my husband. We're just like watching TV, and, you know, it was the scene with these young adults hooking up who were playing like teenagers, but they're like people my same age. And I remember being just like having the thought like, oh my gosh, does this mean that I could be a pedophile? And that thought was like, oh, my brain is is broken, is freaking out, the fact that I could even have that thought. And that no matter what I did to reassure myself or say that's ridiculous, it kept coming back up, that just that fear, that possibility. And then the next day I was like, okay, I'm going to go to bed, whatever, wake up, I'll snap out of this, stop worrying about this. But in school, we had this like lecture on child abuse, and it was just like a dagger twisting in me. I remember just that fear that I'd started sort of obsessing about the day before now was like, what if I am going to be a bad parent? What if I am going to hurt my children? And you know, OCD is like it's like an evil genius. It will go after whatever you care about most, right?
Yeah.
And all I've ever wanted in life really is to be a mom. Mm. So this was really, really upsetting. And, you know, didn't make any sense to me. And then, you know, over the next few months, it was just, my OCD was just on a rampage. I would, you know, read a news article about like a shooting and then have this obsession that like, what if I snapped and, you know, shot up a movie theater or something. And again, not things that I wanted to do, not things that I think I could be capable of doing, but in my, just the fact that somebody in the world, that there are people who do these bad things, my brain was sort of going, well, if they could, why couldn't you? And how are you going to like prove to yourself that you'll never do that? And, you know, with OCD, no matter what you do, you can't prove it. You can never reach that point of reassurance. But I sure did try because I didn't know what was going on. I thought I was going insane. And I know this is a very common story for people who have this. But yeah, at that time, what I recognize now as my compulsions were things like just constantly ruminating, you know, calling and asking my mom if she thinks that I would be a good mom, you know, just asking my family if they think I'm a good person. And they didn't know where this was coming from. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, just going through in my mind, reviewing all the reasons why those things wouldn't make sense. And then, you know, avoidance, of course, avoiding watching anything violent. I started going to church every week, which is like not something that I really do, you know, and of course that actually made me feel a little bit worse. And it was just horrible. So I feel like I got more and more sick over like the course of a year, and the whole time I was also trying to go to medical school. And I remember feeling just so disgusted with myself and like, why am I putting in this effort to do this really hard thing if I feel like I'm just going to fail and I don't even trust myself to be a doctor? And what if I'm a bad person? Then I'm going to be someone in this position of power, you know, over other people. And I remember feeling just so undeserving. Like me and my boyfriend at that time had started kind of talking about getting engaged. And I remember feeling like, I feel so unstable. I feel so undeserving of your love, you know? So I would sort of like put it off. I remember I needed a new car, and I remember thinking, I do not deserve a new car. Like seeing how much new cars cost and being like, yeah, no, I am such a messed up person. Like I do not deserve a new car, which I look back and I'm like, I'm so sad that, you know, I was so down on myself. It was really awful. And because I didn't know what was going on. Didn't know if this was OCD. I thought maybe it was, because I do have some medical training. I thought maybe this is generalized anxiety disorder. or maybe I'm just going to become schizophrenic or something. Because even as a medical professional, they don't teach us about OCD, unless maybe you go into psychiatry. I mean, they teach you the very, you know, hand washing, whatever.
Yeah.
But nothing really more than that. So anyways, you know, I got really depressed, sort of stopped eating, had trouble sleeping, calling my family every few days, crying. And we all just sort of chalked it up to being homesick. But that's because I never really shared like these intrusive, taboo, intrusive thoughts I was having, because I didn't know what they were. And I was scared that people would think I was crazy or, you know, dangerous or something.
Yeah.
But then I finally decided to go to a therapist, found one in my area, you know, kind of expensive, and went. But like I've heard a lot of people on your story or on your podcast sharing their stories, didn't really open up fully, you know, like I didn't tell her what my intrusive thoughts were about. I didn't even say the words intrusive thoughts. I just said, worried that I'm a bad person, you know?
Yeah.
And we did a lot of CBT. But basically she taught me to, and I don't blame her because I wasn't fully open. She didn't know what I was going through, but she taught me to write down, you know, these like thoughts or fears or, you know, negative self-talk, and then literally list why they don't make sense, like logic with my brain, which is exactly what you don't want to do if you have OCD, right? It's the compulsion, arguing with the voice in your head. You just don't want to talk back to it at all. So I was basically just talking back to it. And she also taught me some mindfulness and things like that. So it helped a little bit, but basically therapy became my weekly or bi-monthly dose of reassurance. You know, that's kind of what it was.
She told you weren't a bad person, or even indirectly told you. Yeah,
exactly. I'd go, I'd cry. You know, she'd reassure me that I'm not a bad person, that a lot of people deal with anxiety. I'd leave feeling so relieved.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, I'd be like, okay, it's time to go back to therapy.
Yeah. And was there, just to interrupt you quickly on that,
yeah,
was there any part of you that was like, well, she hasn't called the police on me, or she's going to call the police? And the fact that she hasn't means I'm a good person. Because if I was a bad person, she would have. Does that ever come
up? Well, you know what? I just didn't share with her. I did not share with her details. So she had nothing to, I think she was a little confused. You know, I think she's sort of like, why is this young, you know, person who's like doing well in life, like so worried she's a bad person. I don't really get it. And then I would sort of say, well, I'm just like really worried I'm going to be a bad mom, or I feel like very undeserving of, you know, my relationship. And then she'd sort of be like, so you feel undeserving of love. You feel like you have low confidence. And I'd sort of just go with what she was saying, because I was just sort of grasping for something, grasping for straws, like here, would go with whatever she would sort of say I was struggling with, even though I don't know, I knew that I wasn't fully sharing. But the reason I wasn't sharing is because I knew oh, if I tell her, she's gonna tell my school and I'm gonna get kicked out of school.
Yeah.
You know, and med school is expensive in the States. And I was like, I can't, I mean, maybe it's like that in Britain too, but I was like, you know, I can't lose everything, you know, I can't do that. So I ended up just going to my PCP and saying, oh, I have anxiety. Can I get started on an SSRI? I did that. And it was a really hard decision, because I remember feeling like it was such a big deal, which in hindsight, I feel like I'm like, whatever. But for some people, you know, it is. And it really helped me for about 10 months. But then the intrusive thoughts came back. And I remember being so devastated. But the medicine didn't work, you know, cause they were back. And I ended up going to a different therapist that my friend had been to. And this one thought that I had anger issues stemming from like infancy, you know, where my, because I had, my sister was kind of sick when she was a baby, my little sister, and my mom was in the hospital for maybe like 3 weeks with my sister. And I remember the doc, this therapist saying, oh, I think you like have anger issues deep rooted from being abandoned by your mom for a few weeks. And that freaked me out, because I'm like, you think I have anger issues? And that's why, because I actually told this therapist a little bit of my thoughts about being a bad person. And I was like, oh my God, that means you think that I'm angry and I can actually do these things. And she wanted to, you know, do therapy every day for like 2 hours for a week. And I was like, I'm a student. I cannot do this. I cannot afford this. Had a little freak out. And that night went home and was like at my breaking point, about ready to check myself into a psych ward, break up with my fiance at that time. And I just did something that I hadn't even done at this point, because I was so scared of like someone tracking me or finding me, is just Googled, you know, intrusive thoughts about XYZ. Or I didn't even use the term intrusive thoughts. I just said anxious, like thoughts about this or something. And I came across an article by Allegra. Is that her name? Allegra Castings?
Yeah.
On, I think, like intrusivethoughts.org or something. And I, about OCD and like pure OCD. And I was like, oh my God, this is it. This is me. Like, finally, something makes sense. Like, I really think this is exactly what I've been going through. And I looked back and I was like, you know, the time in college with the health. And there's been a time when I've had some sort of like sexual orientation obsession for a few weeks that I didn't understand. Even growing up, little things like praying a certain way. And I was like, this absolutely makes sense. And to see these exact like taboo thoughts too, be like the exact ones that there's, that's like a very common OCD presentation. It just blew my mind. Finally, I like figured out, I felt like I figured out what was going on. So, sorry, that was kind of a long story, takes me to finding your podcast, listening, really like connecting with people on the podcast. And then I found NoCD, the app and the therapy service through NoCD, and got some like really affordable teletherapy through them, which was absolutely life-changing. You know, we did ERP. It was, you know, pretty intense for the first few weeks, but I was able to maintain, you know, being a full-time student through it. So for anyone listening who's thinking about therapy, like, you can do it. You don't have to put your life on hold. In fact, maybe depending on your circumstance, but maybe it's better not to, because OCD doesn't deserve to take all of that time away from you. And I slowly started to get better, and I just really like educated myself on OCD, you know, so that I could kind of be one step ahead of it. Got pretty into meditation, and I, you know, even to this day, I feel like I can tell when I've been meditating, and just, it's an incredible thing that really trains your brain, to be mindful. And so since then, I'm now in my medical residency. You know, I got married, I've gone through a move, and I'm still just living my life with OCD. It's a little bit of a roller coaster, but I've noticed that now when the symptoms come, the little bumps in the road, or the, you know, bumps of the roller coaster, are getting shorter and shorter. And I feel like in general, it's an upward slope. I've learned that, you know, some people, I guess, might be able to cure themselves of OCD, but I think that that's probably pretty rare. I had thought after my first round of ERP that, yes, I'm done with this, cured, check it off, onto the next thing in life. You know, this is never going to have to bother me anymore. And then I was on my honeymoon of all places, and the symptoms started again, you know, and I in hindsight, I know, well, I started compulsing around them because I was scared, and that just made them worse. Yeah. So OCD, you know, I've learned to sort of expect it even when I least want it. But yeah, I heard, I think I was reading a book by Shannon Shy. I have like all these OCD books now, because at one point that was like a compulsion to be like, I'm going to buy all the books that I can possibly buy. I'm like, then my OCD symptoms get better a few days later, and then I never read them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I opened this one and he said something about like, every time you overcome an OCD sort of relapse, I guess, or just, you know, a spike that the thoughts get more noisy, maybe you get drawn into the compulsions a little bit, your anxiety spikes. Every time you overcome one of those situations, it's like adding another brick onto your foundation. You're building your foundation higher and higher, and that just gives more and more separation between you and your OCD. And I really kind of liked that analogy, because it fights the sort of like a defeatist like shame that you get when you have these relapses. And instead it's like, no, I expected this was coming. I have the tools to deal with this. And by getting through this relapse, I'm just going to train my brain to be even stronger. So that's kind of where I'm at right now, is just trying to change sort of the mindset around OCD, recognize that I have a choice in things. I do get to choose whether I engage with my thoughts or not. And just trying, you know, not to fall for the bait that OCD yeah. throws at me, and being just compassionate with myself when I do fall for it, you know, not getting so down on myself, realizing that you're not starting from scratch. Yeah, I guess that's kind of my OCD story.
Well, thank you for sharing.
Yeah,
I've got a few questions. So, I mean, I think it's interesting that, yeah, on your honey, we're not interesting. I guess it's just a good point that is, I'm getting a dumb stumbling down. Anyway, on your honeymoon, that it came up. And that's mm-hmm. what I mean by being interesting. Like, it's not interesting in the sense of, like you said, you kind of knew it would happen around that time, because that's
probably
the time. Exactly. That's the sort of thing that happens. Like, I guess, because if we look at it on your honeymoon, everything, you've just been married, everything's going great in theory. Oh, yeah. And then maybe you're at peace. And then that's when, because all OCD really is your brain trying to keep you safe. It's mm-hmm. just doing it too well. You know, it's overdoing mm-hmm. it. So if you're in a place where you're at calm and you're at peace, the brain's going to go, hang on a minute, we're not looking for danger. Where's the danger? And then that's when yep. it kicks in. So, which is annoying for the honeymoon. But yeah, like you said, you then just go,
oh, yeah. So annoying. Yeah. And we were at this, like, yoga retreat, like so peaceful, you know, I'm out there like, I'm gonna have this sort of like out of body experience, it's gonna be lovely, and then I have these intrusive thoughts, and I spend, you know, 2 hours that day in my room like reading articles on OCD. Okay. And then I'm like, wait a second, this is not what I need to in right now. And I've noticed that, at least for me personally, like now that I am in like a very busy, demanding job, but I do still have these periods where I'll be like on an elective or something, and it suddenly gets way more chill, relaxed. That's when OCD comes for me personally, is when your mind's not constantly sort of going with these other things. So I don't know. That's kind of a similar phenomenon, I guess.
Yeah, good observation. And yeah, on you being, so I'm with the terminology, do you call yourself a doctor now, or doctor in training? What's the, like, the term?
I am a doctor. Okay. It's basically you finish medical school and then you have to do further training in whatever like area you're going into. So you are a doctor. You're just not like board certified in anything for the next 4 years. You can't do like your own private practice. But yeah, you see patients, you prescribe things, and you just have some like supervision.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So as a doctor or medical professional, when you, cause you said you, when you first took medication, you kind of hesitated on it a bit. Was there any stigma for you being a medical professional and almost like, I shouldn't need this, or is there anything like that that came?
Yeah. Huge stigma. Which I think is so sort of like, I mean, it's very kind of hypocritical because we tell our patients all the time, like, there's nothing wrong with this, you know, like if you need this, it's going to help you, it's safe, blah, blah, blah. But then it, when it comes to us, I think also a lot of healthcare professionals are very perfectionistic. So I think, I mean, I'm saying this and I'm like not liking the way that it comes across. It's not like we think that I'm better than other people and shouldn't be taking this, but it's more like, you know, you feel like you're supposed to be the one helping other people, treating them. And
if you don't you have can't it even help sorted yourself, in air quotes.
Not, if you, and yeah, there is a big stigma around, you know, anything mental health when you're a medical professional. And nowadays there's, so actually doctors have like one of the highest rates of suicide of like any profession, any like career, at least in the United States. And so there's this big movement for like preventing burnout is the terms that we use here, or like wellness. But it's kind of funny. I mean, they're trying. I don't know that I have better ideas, but the way that they do this is like, oh, we're going to like give you guys lunch, like free food for lunch, or like, we're going to do a little like 30 minute meditation during lunch one day. We're just going to like tell doctors that in order to prevent burnout, you need to be, you know, getting this much sleep and exercising. And it's like, okay, cool. But then you expect us to work 80 hour weeks and you take all these really emotional, sensitive people and put them in these situations where they're under so much stress, so much pressure, not making very much money, at least when you're in training, and then you're surrounded by death and dying all the time, you know. And it's like, the
you get a free, they might lunch,
need like a little bit more than that in order to not be in order to have wellness, you know. At least at my med school, we were supposed to have a therapist, or they didn't call it a therapist, but like a mental health person. But the person, you know, it was always being changed. And then, you know, I had some friends who went to her, and then turns out, you know, she's leaving, we need to get a new one. And then, oh, turns out, you know, this is supposed to be like a bridge. Like you can only see her for like a few weeks when you're going through a hard time. And it was just kind of a joke. So anyways, I think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done. There's huge stigma that needs to be overcome, which I'm still going through. You know, I mean, it's not like you need to go share, like shout out to all of your coworkers exactly what you're dealing with, but even just telling somebody, if someone found out that you were taking like a medication, I feel like you'd be looked at as maybe as weak, especially by some of the, maybe some of like the older generation providers. So I do think things are changing in medicine to be a little more understanding that doctors are humans too, and actually go through a lot of like really hard, you know, environmental like things in life that might need some mental health care. But it's a slow process.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I asked it, I think, because I know, I'm sure there's many medical professionals that listen to this, but I know there's a lot of therapists and psychiatrists that listen. And of course, they have troubles too. Although I'd like to think maybe they're maybe a bit more willing to accept it than maybe physical medical doctors, if that makes sense, not mental medical doctors.
Yeah, no, sure.
But not necessarily. And then your husband, at what point in your journey did you share with him kind of what was going on?
Yeah. So when I was really sick, before I knew that I had OCD, I mean, he knew something was going on because there would be mornings where I'm just lying in bed crying and I can't tell him why, because I didn't share with him like the severity or details of what was going on in my mind. But I would say, you know, I just can't like shake this fear that like, what if I'm going to be a bad doctor is what I would say. Okay. Or, you know, this irrational idea that I'm, you know, going to be a bad mom or something like that. Or like, I think maybe I just feel really homesick. So he knew something was kind of going on then. But I didn't, then when I figured out, okay, I think this is OCD, I told him, I said, you know, I did some research and I think that I might have OCD. And he kind of gives me that look like, what? Like, you don't, like, I've seen OCD on TV. Like, I've seen Monk, you know, I don't think you have that. And I sort of explained like, no, actually there's like these other sort of manifestations, and explained it. And he's amazing. He was like, wow. Yeah. Like, that sounds really hard. You know, I've never gone through anything like that. How can I help you? Like, how can we get you the help that you need?
Yeah.
I have an amazing husband, so I could talk about him forever, but he's been with me, you know, with me through this ever since then.
Yeah.
I remember he even said once, like, you know, if we need to get, oh, this was when we were engaged. He says, if we need to get married, like now, instead of in 6 months, so that you can get on my insurance and get like better health care, like, let's do it. You know, and I was like, wow, I can't believe that you want to marry a crazy person. Which, we're not crazy people. That was just me at that time, not understanding. But yeah, so him, I mean, and to be honest, do I tell him all of the details of these intrusive thoughts that I have, you know, when they come? No, because I'm still have a little bit of guilt and or a little bit of shame around them. And I do, it's true. And I know that if I did share, maybe it would relieve some of that shame. Honestly, coming on this podcast is, you know, challenging me. But I think it's going to help me sort of overcome some of that shame. But I also feel like I sort of tell him what he needs to know, and he knows not to reassure me, and, you know, those sorts of things. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I'm glad you had his support. Yeah.
Okay. And just, yeah. So people out there know, like, you know, you can share these things with your loved ones. Sometimes they'll take it like he does.
Mm.
And sometimes, so I told my mom, I really got the courage to talk to my mom, and I've always sort of tried to seem kind of perfect for her, I think. And I told her, I said, you know, remember a couple of years ago when I was, you know, calling you crying every other day and had a really hard time in med school. And I think they just kind of thought it was, yeah, med school's hard, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I said, you know, I figured out that I actually was OCD, and, you know, here's how, you know, it sort of manifests with intrusive thoughts, you know, that don't make sense, and you can't stop worrying about them. And she goes, huh, that doesn't really make sense to me. And goes, you know, I've just always been a really rational person. And I remember that just rubbed me the wrong way. I was like, oh, okay. You're so rational. And I know she didn't mean it that way, but my point in sharing this is that, I guess, you know, some people might react one way, some people another, and they know that you do sort of have to be careful who you share it with, things with, and what you share, just because not everybody understands. But, you know, I would encourage people to, for the most part, you know, share, you know, overcome the shame by sharing.
Yeah. Good point. So in your journey, was there like an epiphany moment, a light bulb moment, just where something made sense, either about OCD and the way it works or the treatment of it. You just kind mm-hmm. of, something clicked.
Yeah, I think maybe a few weeks after getting into to ERP, I remember, like, I actually found these notebooks, that a notebook that I used to keep before I was diagnosed, where it was basically just like rumination on a page.
Okay.
When I would be so anxious, I'd be like, I don't know what to do. You know what? I'm going to do what I always do. I'm going to logic through it. I'm going to write it down. So I would go and I would write, you know, here's what I'm feeling. Here's why it doesn't make sense. And just reassure myself on page. And I went back and I was like cleaning out my office or something. And I found that. And I was just like, wow, you know, I was so sick and I did not understand what was going on. And now, like, ERP is such an incredible thing. Now I can look back on this and understand exactly why that wasn't helping me. And feel, I was almost like, almost laughing. Like, it's almost becomes funny, the things that I used to like think or like worry about. And sometimes it's not funny. Like, I can be laughing about it one day and then a few days later, I'm like, oh, but what if this is true? You know, but I guess realizing that ERP actually works, it was like a big breakthrough. And also that something can seem so important and so a problem can seem so unsolvable when you're in like the thralls of the anxiety. And then if you just don't engage with it and you just wait it out, then you can address that same problem. And it's not even a problem anymore. You're like, oh, I can see this so much more clearly. Yeah. And so, yeah, I feel like those are sort of moments that I've had where things have just, I've just really begun to understand the way OCD works. And I guess I kind of answered your question. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it was a good answer. Okay. And obviously, you know, you have OCD as well as training as a doctor and being a doctor, which can be high stress, as we discussed earlier. As well as, I'm sure, deeply rewarding as well at times. Yeah. But how do you manage, like, so other than therapy and medication, what else has helped you kind of manage stress, anxiety, worry, anything like that?
Yeah. I think self-compassion, you know, really trying to change the way that I talk to myself to be more positive, which is hard. It, you know, it's more of a habit that you make. Also mindfulness, mainly through meditation. And I mean, I say that, and I think the last time I meditated, it was like 5 days ago. I'm like certainly still struggling at forming a habit that, but sometimes I like fall asleep, but you know, trying. And I do think it's an incredible tool. Getting exercise, and not, I used to be maybe sort of a compulsive exerciser, like I do every day, but more just like, you know, moving my body, getting those endorphins and prioritizing sleep, just sort of like just taking care of yourself. I think been things that I've used. I've also occasionally gone to like peer support groups. I know Chrissy Hodges has a good one called OCDpeers.com. And then Christina Orlova has a app that I actually joined because I was only doing therapy, you know, not very regularly. Because of my schedule, I couldn't really, you know, get in very often. But I'm looking it up right now, the name of this program. It's called Mastering OCD. I think it's like $30 a month. And there's like a whole community of people on here. And she does like live Q&As. She does like little lecture series. I just wanted to like do a little plug for that, but little things like that, you know, and really just trying to stay on top of doing ERP, thinking about OCD, even when I'm feeling well, because I'll notice that sometimes I'm feeling well and I want to just sort of forget about it. But then you're not practicing that. Yeah. So then when it does come up, you know, you can kind of fall into that OCD cycle more easily.
Good point. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So what was I going to say? Yeah, you've got a billboard where you live. What do you want written on that billboard?
So I've been thinking about this one. And I think I want written, "My mental illness makes me sexy."
Nice.
Because you know what? It does. We're compassionate. We're interesting. In tune with ourselves. I think it's sexy.
Yeah, I can run with that. Yeah, that's good. And definitely haven't had that one before. So
I know.
So you can pick up the phone and call the 20-year-old you. What do you tell her?
I think I tell her to be gentle with yourself, you know, and trust that everything will make sense one day soon.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Well, look, I really appreciated hearing your story today. But lastly, is there anything else you wish you could have said or shared?
I think just that you, like, for people listening who maybe are really still like kind of scared of their OCD or maybe are in college or something, and worried that you're not gonna be able to have the career that you want, I think I'd just say that, like, you can do whatever you want, personally, professionally. If you want to have kids, have kids. Like, I am 100% without a doubt having kids. And I know that my OCD is probably going to go after that. Mm. But we can overcome it. People do all the time. If you want to be a doctor, be a doctor. If you want, you know, if you want to become a therapist, if you want to be a lawyer, like a writer, whatever, you can do it no matter what you're going through. And you should do it, because that's how you beat OCD. You're not living OCD's life. You're living your life. And I think that's what I want to say.
Yeah, I like that. Great way to end. Well, look, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story with everyone.
Thank you for having me. This was really special. I appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. And if you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.